Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and as always, I'm joined by Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison for yet another busy show. We'll discuss the huge news that broke on Monday morning that Ben Stokes will return to the England Test squad for the Ashes series, and we'll ask how much that improves their chances of success. We'll also discuss a winning start for England in the T20 World Cup. We'll revel in Pakistan's 10-wicket win over India, and also speak live to the Scotland head coach, Shane Berger, after they reached the Super 12s of the tournament. We'll also hear from the likes of Liam Livingstone, Adil Rashid and Chris Silverwood. This is the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Well, Harmy, it was the news that every England fan was hoping to hear, and we heard it on Monday. Ben Stokes is ready for Australia, in his words, and that is just brilliant.
It is brilliant. What a tonic that was on a Monday morning after a big Sunday and an even bigger Saturday night. It was fantastic news. It's great news that, you know, put England aside for a second, man. It's great news for Ben Stokes, just to feel as though he can get back out, pick a bat up, better bowl and ball. I think the signs were there a couple of weeks ago when he was practicing, and it was all over social media. But for me, yeah, I'm just happy that a good friend of mine is feeling good and feeling better about himself, and he's able to get back on the cricket field, and where better to go than go and play against the old enemy in Australia. And it's a boost for English cricket, it's a boost for the England cricket team, boost for Joe Root. But for me, it's just fantastic to see that Ben is feeling better about himself, and he's in a position to go and play cricket again, because it'll be not only tough for him from, you know, obviously what he's been going through mentally, but to see and watch. Ben is somebody that always wants to be on the field. He's always wanting to be in the thick of the action. And what that kid's gone through in the last 2 years, it would have broke anybody a lot sooner than it affected Ben Stokes. You know, the world of the expectation of the England cricket team, whether he's playing with a white ball or the expectation of a side in the Red Bull side who hasn't been doing as well from a batting unit point of view, and to throw in all that, you know, that how he lives his life. And I'd sampled it with Andrew Flintoff, a little bit like what Ian Botham was before. He was the man that everybody's eyes were on every time he walked out on the pitch, wherever he was on the pitch, you know, whether there was young kids or, you know, middle-aged men, they all wanted to sort of watch, see and expect from Ben Stokes. And then throw in the loss of a parent, you know, I can understand, you know, the troubles he's gone through from, you know, from a mental point of view. And it's just great to see the kid back. It really is.
His injury is an interesting one as well, isn't it? Because it's your index finger you use all the time. I mean, you know, whatever you're doing, and if it's broken and it's been operated on and it hasn't healed properly, and, you know, and it's causing you constant pain and discomfort on top of everything else, and an injury like that just wears you down, doesn't it? I mean, you just, oh, the frustration is immense.
Yeah, and you've got to remember as well, when you're talking about professional sportsmen, you've got to have a release, and your release is your family, your relief is your sort of hobbies, your private life, because they don't get many they don't get much time off cricketers now. A lot of it, in Ben's case, by his own choice, because he plays in the IPL. He's good enough to play in the IPL and the riches that comes with that. So that's his choice, that he doesn't have as much time off as he does. But he likes a game of golf. And you mentioned your index finger. Your finger is so important. So if you can't get your release, then all of a sudden that does drag you down. It does constantly have your head down rather than your head up. There's no light at the end of the tunnel when you're injured. I look at someone like Ben Stokes. He loves playing cricket. He loves playing cricket no matter who he's playing for. You know, whether he's playing, he's practicing, he trains exactly the same way. And I think that having an injury will hamper him mentally more than anything else. So you can see why, you know, Ben's had the struggles he's had, but it's great news that he's back.
Did you see the news that the Premier of Victoria is talking about having 80,000 people on Boxing Day for the Boxing Day Test match? I mean, it's optimistic. I think the numbers are something like 90% of over 12s would have to be vaccinated in order for restrictions to be removed. Meanwhile, Western Australia continues with it. I don't know. It's a state unto itself. I mean, they're talking about the Perth Scorchers having to play their entire Big Bash League campaign outside of Perth, outside of Western Australia, because of the restrictions. Western Australia really has always been a law unto itself. But how do you think Australia will take to the news that Ben Stokes, or will take to the fact that he's going to be there?
I think it's going to be positive from, you know, the game of cricket's point of view. You'll get some stick, like we all did. We all got stick when we go over there. You get it from the minute you get off the plane. You know, the guys that are throwing your bags onto the carousel are telling you that you're going to get beat 5-0. Glenn McGrath's going to be right. He's going to get it all the time. So I don't think the level of stick and banter and abuse or whatever you want to you call it from the sideline, I don't think that's going to be any different to whether Ben Stokes has 2 years in the game or 2 years out of the game. I think as much as Nathan Lyon's telling us that it's great, now, you want to play against the best, I'm sure the Australian cricket team were thinking, right, without Ben Stokes, you've got a great chance of winning the Ashes or retaining the Ashes. Now, you can say what you want, but I think privately they'll be thinking, this is going to be doubly as hard because of what Ben gives. Ben hasn't played a great deal of cricket, or he won't have played a great deal of cricket by the time the first test match goes. But the little 10% he gives the team is what the boost that England need, because he'll get better, Ben, throughout the tour. But that just that 10% that we've got Ben Stokes on the field with us, that, for me, just is massive for England. And that could be the difference between swaying the balance between England and Australia. I still think Australia are massive favourites. But I think when you come to it, I think Australia have got to be happy that Ben Stokes is coming. I think they've got to be happy that England are coming. And you take the Perth game out of the equation, I think you're going to have a decent-sized crowd with good atmosphere for the other four test matches. Now Ben Stokes is there, I think it's going to be a bit more of a contest.
What do you think Jack Leach and Don Bess made of the news that Ben Stokes would be there?
I think their Christmases came at once. I think they might have been doing backflips. I don't think they'd have been great to see their pal back, but I think they'll be doing backflip because if I was a spin bowler in that 17-man squad, I think I'd have been practicing, you know, with a spoon, trying to work out whether it's three rashers or four rashers into the drinks bottle and give it a swirl. Because without Ben Stokes, England can't play a spinner. No chance. No way in the world England can play a spinner, because they'd have to leave a batsman out, put five bowlers, and devalue the team in that respect for me. And the only way for me to win the Ashes is if they get runs on the board. And I think they're going to need as many batting options as they possibly can. But you're right. I think Leach and Bess might be sending Ben Stokes a bit bigger Christmas card and a nice little present when they get to Melbourne for the Boxing Day Test match. Because now the balance of the England cricket side is going to be a lot better. The chance of getting a spin bowler into the England cricket team is going to be a lot better. And it just makes England, for me, it just makes England so much stronger because of the balance of having enough bowling options and, you know, retaining the the seven batsmen, it gives them a better chance to get runs on the board for the bowlers to get a chance to take 20 wickets.
And finally, when you say that Ben won't have played much cricket, that sounds like quite good news to me. I like the idea of him being super, super fresh. And it's not like he's work shy. I mean, it makes your eyes water watching him train. To watch him go through his training routines after a game is just intimidating. So, I mean, the fact that he hasn't played much cricket, he's not going to be lacking fitness. He might be lacking match fitness, but I really like the idea of him super fit, super fresh.
Yeah, absolutely. The problem England have got now is to rein him in. I know what he's like. He'll be wanting to bat all day in the nets. He'll want to be bowling, and it's going to be up to the England captain and the England coaches to just rein him in a bit, because it'll be like when the doors open and the horse goes, and it's, you know, if the jockey's not fully in control, it might go the other way. He could end up getting injured because he's trying too hard, because he wants it too much. And I think that's the challenge for the ECB now, is to get Ben ready as a prime racehorse for that 8th of December. And if they do that, they get the balance right, I think England stand a better chance and a good chance of hopefully doing something in the Ashes.
Well, a couple of days ago, Liam Livingstone was talking to the media from the T20 World Cup. And I think it's fair to say that he was speaking for all England cricketers when he had this to say about Ben Stokes returning to the England Ashes squad.
Yeah, I think it's great news, both for England and for Ben himself. It's great news that his finger's heading in the right way, and it's great news that he's ready to play cricket again. So to have Ben around a group is great. I've played a lot of cricket with Ben over the last couple of years. And just to have him around an environment is a massive boost for any team. So especially going to a massive series like the Ashes, it'll be great for the lads to have Ben around. But I think it'll also be great for Ben to be back around. I'm sure he's really excited to get back to cricket. And I'm sure he'll be really looking forward to getting out to Australia and getting involved in an Ashes series. So, like you said, it's great for English cricket. And it's a massive boost for the boys going out there to Australia.
That was Liam Livingstone. And we all endorse that view. Now, to hear the best reaction to Stokes' return, you can listen back to a special podcast here on the Following On feed. Right, it couldn't have gone much better for England in the opening game of the T20 World Cup. All that speculation, all that theorising about what a tough game it was and how dangerous the West Indies were. Wow. Again, you know, there are a couple of things that grab the headlines. The fact that the West Indies were bowled out for 55, and some of the numbers, Adil Rashid, 4 for 2. Yes, 4 for 2, in case you missed it. Harmy, what did you make of it all? I mean, apart from shock.
Not a surprise, because we have said on the collective, when we talked about the preview in the World T20, that the West Indies will either get 200 or they'll get bowled out for 80. Well, it wasn't quite 80, 55 was... England looked superb. England looked great, but the West Indies, I wasn't surprised. And when people had them down as one of the favourites, look, they might still do well in the tournament, like you say, but not for me. In Australia, in the Caribbean, South Africa or England, on better, on more surfaces, which ball comes on, you can just stand there and smack the line of the ball out of back to West Indies to do well in a tournament. On a wicket where you're not quite at it, you've got to possibly manoeuvre the ball around. Yeah, these surfaces aren't conducive, especially if you're a seamer and you hit the pitch hard. It's very, very difficult to trust the line, the ball and being able to hit through the line of it. I didn't back the West Indies one bit, and it wasn't a surprise that they got well beat by England. I think it was the manner. If I was a West Indies supporter, it was the manner of the capitulation for me. That was like these guys, not so much not interested. It was like, well, I've got one plan. I'm just going to try and belt it out the park. And if I get out, next man's going to do it. It was like, we're off to a bad start. Let's just get off the field as quickly as we possibly can. And I thought they were a shambles, but from England's point of view, I thought they were magnificent.
They were a shambles. I just remember watching them against Afghanistan in their warm-up game, and the bowlers, the West Indies bowlers, looked like they were just having a stretch, to be honest. It was it was just a net without the nets. Afghanistan put 180 on the board, and they just weren't interested in chasing him down. I mean, there was no urgency, and it just carried on, really. I mean, it was, I don't want to question attitude, because, you know, it's, they are professional cricketers and they are match winners, all of them. But somehow, maybe they're too many match winners. Maybe they all just left it to each other. Was that the problem?
Yeah, too many. Yeah, question attitude. I will question attitude from a professional sportsman's point of view, that, you know, there's a level that you need to have to be a fine sportsman. And they've got it. They've all proved it. The problem for me was the selection of this 15-man squad. They picked a bunch of individuals. And I think in 2020, you can play as individuals, but you've got to have some sort of team work ethic, team cohesion, a team plan. And for me, there was no team plan. From three down, it was like, what's going to change here? Nothing. Next one, off you go. Next one, off you go. And they've got too many, like you said, too many that you think are match winners, but are possibly over the hill when it comes to big lads, you know, not very athletic in the field. Yeah, for me, I've seen this before the tournament. I'm quite happy to say, not totally so, but I've seen this, and I didn't for 1 minute think that the West Indies would be anywhere near in this competition because of the surfaces that we're going to play on. You have to think a little bit more. You have to work a little bit harder to earn the right to get in, to then hit the ball on these wickets. They just give their wickets away. And that, for me, is the concern from a West Indies fan point of view. And where is the future for the West Indies cricket? Because that is the biggest worry. That's why they're going to basketball. That's why they're going to baseball. Yeah, there's money coming into cricket. And unfortunately, you're picking players who were not interested in playing for the West Indies for maybe 2.5 years until a big tournament comes around, make themselves available. And, you know, fair enough, they were playing one of the best teams in the world, but they showed the Caribbean islands up, getting bowled out for 55.
All right, let's catch up with some of the reaction from the game in case anybody missed it. The captain, Kieran Pollard, who is a man of immense standing in T20 cricket and in international cricket, this is what he had to say afterwards.
It's disappointing to start, you know, a tournament, you know, like that, being defending champions. But having said that, you know, it's something that we just need to accept. We accept it fully. We take full responsibility for what transpired out there. And for us, as I said, games like these, you try to bin it as quickly as possible and you move on.
Yeah, they do have to forget about it and they do have to move on very quickly. I mentioned also that Adil Rashid took 4 for 2. This is what he had to say about the bowling unit.
We don't look at it like that. We look at it as a bowling unit. You know, we know we've got, you know, 5-6 bowlers there, match winners. So on any given day, you know, anybody can come on and get wickets, and like that is shared, you know, in every other game as well. So it's not just about spin. It's definitely a bowling unit. It's not just about any individual. For ourselves, it's definitely a bowling unit thing, not just about the spinners or whatever. So that's what it is.
That's Adil Rashid stressing the importance of the bowling unit. It's not a concept that many cricketers or cricket supporters and followers will be able to understand very easily, Harmy. But I know as a commentator that it is very important, particularly in T20 cricket.
It is important. A lot of people get this perception of T20 cricket and the best teams with the best batsmen who hit the ball the furthest are going to win. For me, it's not the case. The bowlers win the games. Because if one bowler bowls these 4 overs for 15 or 18, that's the difference. 10 runs is the difference between winning and losing a cricket match. I thought Moeen Ali was brilliant the other night. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. You talk about confidence. He took a catch early on in the game. And the confidence that gave Moeen to go and then bowl his 4 overs, you know, 3 of them inside the power play, was huge. It was massive. And I think that when you talk about bowling the unit, especially against someone like the West Indies, you're saying to yourself as a group, right, let's stick together. If we bowl 2 good overs in a row, we'll take 3 wickets because these will give wickets away. And a lot of teams, if you bowl as a unit, the opposition beat themselves because then the pressure of having to hit the ball for 6, the pressure of having to score at 10 and over, all of a sudden, it hasn't changed. Even having retired a long time ago, with 2020 cricket, 120 cricket balls is a long time, and you can catch things up. The West Indies never for one second during that game did anybody go, right, I'm going to bat. Even if I bat for 10 balls and 8 of them are dots, I'm big enough and strong enough and confident enough now, because I've been a while, to hit 2 balls for 6. And all of a sudden, I'm going to run a ball. And then your confidence moves on because you put the pressure back on the bowlers. Bowling in a unit, when you bowl together against a team like the West Indies, you bowl 2 good overs, that could be 3 wickets, that's game over. And that's what England did.
England head coach Chris Silverwood reminded everybody after the game just how important Moeen Ali is to the England team. He hasn't played much T20 cricket, but it was a terrific match for him.
He's very calm, very chilled out character, as you all know. I mean, around the dressing room, he has a lot of value. Obviously, the knowledge he's got through cricket as well, but the way that he's very good at pulling people together as well. And he's an important cog in the wheel inside the dressing room. But, yeah, I mean, what we've seen is, you know what I mean, with the form that he's in, the character is just coming out, and it's great to see. And like I say, it's so much fun to have around. But we're seeing that fun go out into the field as well. So we've got to try and keep him in that position.
England head coach Chris Silverwood, I really enjoyed the fact that Moeen Ali was made man of the match, just quickly, Harmy, because it showed a good understanding and a reading of the game. All too often, the man of the match award just goes to the most eye-catching figures and numbers. And that obviously was Adil Rashid's 4 for 2. But Moeen bowled his 4 straight through, took 2 for 17, and then was part of a rejigged batting order, which was intent on scoring the runs as quickly as possible. A project that did not include David Milan.
No, it didn't. And I just wonder where this is going to go with no David Milan, because if Moeen Ali, again, you look at England, you're thinking that's the last thing David Milan needs. He's already getting questioned about his players. And then you're thinking, right, just let him go out there. Number 3, belt 12. He's not going to be asking questions anymore. We've won the game by 9 wickets. Yeah, he's got 12. Moeen's got wickets. I thought Moeen Ali was brilliant. I can understand the elevation of Moeen Ali in the order because of what has happened to him in the IPL. He possibly could have gone in, and that could have been Morgan just swapping for him. But the Milan situation, I look at someone like Mark Wood, I look at Pearce on the ball, 2 spin bowlers. If you've got Pearce on the ball, Mills bowled nicely. If you had Wood in there as well, then all of a sudden England might think, we might not need David Milan. Everybody moves up one. Moeen then bats at number 6. And we can get Mark Wood in this side. We've got two fast lads. You know, 2 lads that bowl to death in Jordan and Wokes. And we've got 2 spin bowlers that can bowl at any point in this in the 20 overs. You're thinking that might be the better balance of the side going forward. So it'll be a watch this space on that one. But I felt sorry for Milan, but it was the right thing to do. But he had pressure before the tournament. He's now got a little bit more on it. We shut it down to number 7.
The point about the net run rate, though, is that England are sorted there. You know, barring another result as extraordinary as this one, and that's highly unlikely. The thing is, if it does come down to net run rate in a group of 5 games, 6 teams, England are sorted. Just a quick look ahead then to the Bangladesh game, which is next up for England. They're a dangerous team, good spinners. They haven't been at their best. They put 170 on the board, though, against Sri Lanka, who then chased them down, courtesy of a couple of drop catches. Do you see that as a potential banana skin?
Yeah, it's a banana skin. But I think England's professionalism, the confidence that England had the other night, and as well as that, manners, I think when you look at Bangladesh, they're going to be looking at England and a little bit of trepidation because of what they've just done to the West Indies. You know, that for me sent messages to every other team in the competition, nearly as big as the Pakistan against India game, where teams around the world, teams in the competition from other nations are going, oh, these look good. England look good. We expected them to be good, but they actually look good. And I think that when you're in like a tournament, does send a message. And I think Bangladesh will come. They've got some good players, but I don't see it being too much of an issue with England. England are a well-oiled machine, and I don't see that changing. So for me, I think England will win comfortably.
Right, you're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. And next up, we'll discuss a disappointing afternoon for Scotland, who began the Super 12s with a heavy defeat to Afghanistan. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Scotland came into this one buoyed by the fantastic way in which they'd qualified for the Super 12, but they ran into an inspired Afghanistan side who smashed 190 for 4 in their 20 overs after electing to bat first, led by Najibullah Zadran's 59 from just 34 balls. Then when Scotland batted, things went wrong pretty quickly. From 27 without loss, after 3 overs, they were dismissed for 60 after just 2 balls of the 11th over. 5 wickets for Majib Ur Rahman and 4 for Rashid Khan for just 9 runs. Tough then on Scotland, they lose by 130 runs.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast, now available from the following on feed via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. And I'm delighted to say, as promised, we're joined live on the line now from Sharjah by Scotland head coach Shane Berger. Shane, let's get the bruising out of the way first before we talk about the qualification for the Super 12s. It was a 130-run defeat, but to Afghanistan, I must say, it was an absolute joy watching Mujibur Rahman and Rashid Khan. I mean, a painful joy. Because we were all wishing Scotland the very best. But my goodness me, Afghanistan looked strong last night.
Yeah, it was a world-class performance. The lads showed why they're some of the world's best bowlers. And yeah, just for us, you know, it's amazing how this game sometimes has the ability just to pull you back down to earth and just keep you humble and keep your feet on the ground, which is something we speak about quite often. But you can talk about it as much as you want until you get in the pressure cooker, what is a massive World Cup game. It just shows you that they stepped up and they put us under huge amounts of pressure. And ultimately, we just needed to be better than what we showed last night. But look, good learning curve for us, and we'll we'll make sure that we take it forward with us, you know. And great to see what sort of level you need to be at to be able to consistently perform on the world stage.
And that is important though, Shane, isn't it? When you do it, you've qualified for the Super 12s game with India, Pakistan. You talk about Afghanistan's record at Sharjah, which is ridiculous. But when you, in the cold idea, when you come away for it, this is going to make Scotland as a nation and Scotland players individually a lot better from facing these experiences, understanding what it's like to play under pressure and play in these environments, because it can only make them better for the next time they play. Because, you know, that's what Scotland are trying to do. They're trying to become a force in world cricket, and coming up against these situations can only benefit eventually in the long term.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, the stat is, you know, they've just won their 16th game in a row in Sharjah. And if you want to become a consistent team that makes a dent in world cricket, and you guys will know exactly what I'm talking about, you've got to go against the odds sometimes and beat teams in conditions that suit them. And, you know, on those specific conditions that suits them, we knew that, but we also know that we have the game plans in place to go and combat them in those conditions. You know, previously we have beaten Afghanistan. We've played the spin really well previously, but just on this occasion, you know, those fine margins go against you. And we need to make sure that we find a way to turn those fine margins into our favour. But wow, what an occasion and what an experience.
Shane, people look at the scorecard and they go, oh, Scotland were bowled out for 60. But it was talking about learning experiences, it was also the Afghan batting. You know, the guys who have bowled so well, Brad Weil and Josh Davey, the pressure that they were put under by the Afghan top order. And it was really interesting to hear Andy Flower, who's consulting for Afghanistan, talking about their approach, particularly in the power play, which is to not even mind about dot balls as long as they hit boundaries. All their focus was on hitting boundaries in the power play. Interesting approach.
Yeah, and you can speak about it in team talks. You can plan for it. You almost know what's coming at you, you know. And on this particular occasion, where our seamers have been absolutely superb in the games prior to this, we got our execution a little bit wrong. We probably bowled too many balls in the slot, which allows them to really free their hands up and go. It was obvious to see they weren't going to be taking too many singles. You know, boundaries was kind of what they were trying to do, you know. Zazai gives it a fair whack, and, you know, Shahzad's never going to die wondering, is he? So, yeah, but I was particularly impressed by once those two guys got out, just how thorough your Gurbaz and your Zadran were, just the ball striking capabilities and the ability to also run really well between wickets. So it seems like they've got a team and a full package of players that on and really make a good dent in this World Cup. So they've got it all, really. But, you know, just again, good to experience it. And you can plan as much as you want, but you know, until you get in the pressure cooker, you've got to be able to pull out those plans and execute them. And we just didn't quite do that.
In qualifying for the Super 12s for Scottish cricket is massive. It's, for me, it's amazing. I've mentioned and I've joked about this before, I actually live closer to Scotland's international ground than I do to the nearest England international ground now, which is Headingley compared to sort of Edinburgh up the north. So it tells you, and obviously my connections with Kyle Kurtz, I really want Scotland to do well. But you know, you qualify for the group. Yeah, you know, which games are the guys looking forward to the most? Are they looking forward to that 5th of November game, which is the big one against India in Dubai? You know, because that's massive for Scottish cricket.
Is, you know, any occasion you get to play the big four member teams is always a really special occasion. You know, Hami, you mentioned what it does for the country. You know, one of the things that this team desperately wants to do is to inspire a younger generation of players coming through, yeah, to want to get to World Cups, to want to make sure that our structures keep getting better. There's no better way of doing that than going out and performing on the world stage and inspiring a nation in that way, which is something this team has done already. They need to be very proud of that. And but now the key is really, we have the platform to go out and play India, Pakistan. And let's not forget Namibia in the next game too. We've got the utmost respect for Namibia. What they've done in this tournament, they're very much on the same sort of journey we are, where they're also trying to make sure that they get full member status and they're able to play on on the world's, you know, the world stage more often. So the next game is going to be as important as that big game against India or Pakistan or even New Zealand. So the amazing opportunity to play against some of the world's best teams is surely up there for us. And I have no doubt that our guys are looking forward to it. Last night would have, you know, the quicker we get over last night and move forward into tomorrow's game against Namibia, the better. Something we've really spoken long and hard about is just making sure we stay in the moment in this tournament. You know, it's very easy to look back and see what's happened. It's also very easy to look way too far ahead and you just don't really focus on the things you need to, you know. So a real compliment I can also give to this group is we've been away from home now for about 44 days, 45 days. It hasn't felt that long. It's gone by really quickly. So when time tends to go by that quickly, it means that something's actually going really well and you're enjoying your time away. So a little bit of a hurdle yesterday, but we are looking forward to those other games and the challenges that that's going to throw at us.
How much of a incentive is personal advancement for the Scottish players? I mean, there's this perception that, you know, that you're a group of club cricketers, and some players are club cricketers, but there are also players who have had great success personally. I mean, you know, playing in domestic T20 competitions around the world. Brad Weale played in the 100. There's this opportunity to showcase individual talent and, you know, suddenly get offers from, I don't know, the Caribbean Premier League or the PSL, the CPL, you know, all of these. Are the players allowed to allowed to focus on their individual careers?
Yeah, well, one of the goals is not only from a, you know, from a Cricket Scotland badge point of view and what that offers the badge. It's actually, you have an opportunity to build your individual brand too, which is what the likes of Rashid Khan have done, Mohammad Nabi and Mujeeb. You know, these guys have done it around the world. What's made them better players is actually having the opportunity to go in and play other tournaments around the world, the IPLs, the CPLs, everything else. So we have spoken about it. You know, it's, you know, I look at someone like Mark Watson, what he's done in this tournament, and I look at a George Munsey and a Chris Greaves, who's a very unknown. But all of a sudden, your career can change really quickly within the space of a month. Things can happen really quickly for you. So Scottish cricketers are shouting out for opportunities to not only get in other leagues around the world, but county cricket, as you mentioned, Brad Will, Josh Davey plays a lot of county cricket. So, yeah, guys need more opportunities to keep getting better. And the more you can play on a daily basis and keep giving your skills the best chance to get better is what this group is looking for. You know, I can only say from what I've seen in the last 18 months and the way the guys have trained, I've never seen a group of individuals train as hard as they have. And really, you know, sometimes in very wet conditions in Edinburgh, in indoor centres, at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, I've seen guys sacrifice a hell of a lot. So to get the rewards is truly inspiring to see. But they need more opportunity to get out and show what they're really about. And there's a few world-class players within this unit that can only get better.
Finally, Shane, people say that Scotland achieved what you came to do by qualifying for the Super 12s. But when we first spoke to you before the tournament started, you said, not only am I confident then we'll get into the Super 12s, but I really back the boys to cause an upset. I just wonder about that India game. I mean, it's you've got absolutely nothing to lose, and as long as nobody's overawed by the sense of the occasion, I mean, you know, India have got everything to lose. Do you fancy it?
Of course we do. If we didn't, we shouldn't be here. And that's, you know, we've spoken about it at length, you know, about what our aspirations were in this tournament, and to achieve something special not only in the first round but the second round was high up on the agenda. The squad definitely does believe that. You know, T20 cricket is just, things happen so quickly. And on any given day, as we saw yesterday, one over can change the whole course of the game. And we just need to make sure that we, the team that makes that change in the over, that forces things to go, that swings on our side. But do we back ourselves? Absolutely. There's nothing changes in terms of the performance last night. If anything, it only makes us stronger. And we'll learn from it and we'll go roaring ahead. So not just the Indian game, maybe the Pakistan game, maybe the New Zealand game, who knows, any of those games, maybe the next game. We'll take it one game at a time and we'll keep trying to tick the boxes as we go along.
Scotland head coach Shane Berger, thank you so much for your time once again and enjoy the rest of the tournament.
Thanks, lads. Take care.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison.
Right, Harmy, before we talk about Pakistan's historic 10-wicket win over India, let's reflect on a huge story which unfolded before South Africa's must-win game against the West Indies on Tuesday. After some players took the knee and others didn't, Cricket South Africa issued a directive to the players to adopt a consistent and united stance against racism, which involved taking the knee prior to games. Since then, star batsman Quinton de Kock withdrew from the side, citing personal reasons. South African cricket journalist Lungani Zama joined White and Jordan to explain more about what happened.
I think for context, you know, your listeners need to understand that Cricket South Africa have dropped the ball on this several times, and the leadership has changed several times in the past year for a number of reasons. And this unilateral decision by the board has had no consultation with players. As you said, they're instructing them to do so. And I, knowing Quinton de Kock, I would imagine that he's standing up on the fact that we're being told to do this. We have no choice in the matter. I still have human rights that I would exercise in my own way. And to take it further, we don't have the time to expand on all of this, but Quinton de Kock is a player that has race relations very close to his heart, and he's had them for the majority of his career, even before he played for South Africa.
Right.
You know, some of his very best friends is a baseball player that he almost went and played Major League Baseball with, who used to come to his house all the time and have dinners all the time. So this is not a racial matter. I think this is probably more a human rights matter, where they probably feel that they've not been consulted and now they've been instructed to do something with absolutely no consultation whatsoever. It's a strong-arm tactic by the board, who feel that they need to do something. We're in the height of political season in South Africa, and I think Quinton de Kock is probably going to be made the scapegoat for something which, again, I say, the players have not been consulted on. When they were consulted on it previously, the board themselves said, well, South Africa wanted to make a banner where they stood together against England. And the authorities at the time said, oh, no, a banner's not good enough. We need to do something else. And there was no leadership. And now suddenly they've, on a whim, decided unilaterally that, oh, no, actually, we can't leave it to the players. The players must just do what we say. And
I
think the future of South African cricket, well, the future of Quinton de Kock in South African cricket probably comes into question now, because I don't see him signing his next central contract under these circumstances.
I was going to say, Lungani, do you think that'll be it for him? Are we likely to see him again, or will he quit it at this level?
It's a very strong chance that he goes the West Indian route and becomes a freelancer, and there's going to have to be a serious consultation probably with management and how they navigate these steps, because he's a player in his prime. But obviously, with all these T20 leagues mushrooming around the world, he could easily play four or five leagues that require nothing from him in terms of stances, political or otherwise. He must just go and play his cricket. He's just about to become a father. And I know he's had his strong views on the way that Cricket South Africa has been run. And now being told what to do without any consultation is something that obviously pricks at his social conscience.
So this is a tipping point. Will other players follow him?
I wouldn't be surprised. It's just been handled terribly. And, you know, there's a number of, as we know, in the world, there are a number of differing opinions about the impact of it. There's English football players who said they're no longer going to take a knee because they feel its impact has been watered down and it's now just a meaningless gesture, which was his initial thoughts as well, that he'd rather act out what he feels about racism and do things that are tangible rather than take a gesture for the sake of TV cameras and you know, media punchlines. And obviously he's just on different pages with the leadership. But I can foresee a few other players coming out beyond this.
This is quite a story that's developing. My colleague Simon Jordan is with me. Lungani, what's your take on it, Simon? Obviously de Kock, reading into it, has said, look, I'm not going to be told to take the knee.
Yep.
So don't tell me to do it. I'll do it should I choose to do it.
And I thought that was the general consensus behind the sporting engagement behind this particular gesture. It's not a gesture I particularly agree with. I understand the sentiments of it. So I understand entirely where he's coming from. He has previously stood when others are taking the knee, hasn't he?
He has. Yeah, he has. And he stood and he explained that the reasons are personal. But, you know, without being biased on this, as a black South African myself, know Quinton de Kock as a white South African, and I've spent many a time on tour with him. If you're asking me blatantly if he's a racist or not, absolutely not. This goes far deeper than black and white. And I think it is a deeper symptom of the pure mismanagement and lack of leadership that is currently at Cricket South Africa, and the fact that they've chosen this manner to deal with an issue that's been within their system for the past year, and that we're still in the middle of SJN hearings where deep injustices are being brought to the table by players for since readmission and even before. And for them to take this stance, I think there's a lot of political pressure on them to be seen to be strong as a leadership, but they've gone about it completely the wrong way. The day before a must-win World Cup match, and you tell your players you have to do this otherwise, it's just terrible. And you can see the scorecard at the moment. Their minds are elsewhere.
Yes, yeah. I think it's the interesting aspect to me as well, Lungane, is if others will follow Quinton's gesture here, example here, if you like, because he is, correct me if I'm wrong, he's a hugely respected figure in South African cricket. Many look up to him, and others might think, well, if he's doing it, I'll do it.
Yeah, look, the reality is the South African economy, both financial and cricketing, has never been at a lower ebb. So when you start telling players what to do, when they know that they've got financial options, half the players that are missing that could have played in this T20 World Cup missed out on selection because they were busy playing other T20 tournaments that pay almost as much as a central contract does in a year. They were earning that in a couple of weeks. So when you start trying to force people to do things, they look the other way and go, actually, I do not need this because our test team is no longer what it was. Our one-day team has no chance of winning a World Cup. And now our T20 team is in a place where they're being told what to do before a match. So why do I need to play for my country when I could go and get easy money and answer to nobody and just become a freelancer like so many other cricketers are doing around the world?
Can I ask you what, I mean, we're jumping in the media to the conclusion, it's been put out as personal reasons, and we've joined up the dots and made the link that this is because he's been instructed to take the knee. And I'm assuming that is the reason, and you concur with the analysis. What is his position around taking the knee and the supporting of the initiatives around racial injustice? What, you know, he's dying on a particular hill, which is being told to do something that he doesn't fundamentally disagree with because he has his own viewpoints on how it should be represented. Can you give us any insight as to what is his objections? Is it simply being told what to do, or is it he objects to the gesture? What is the thinking behind Quinton's position?
Knowing him, and I'm not quoting him at all here because I've not spoken to him in weeks, but knowing him and his previous stance on it, he would object to the purely authoritarian system of telling you that you have to do this. You do not have a choice as a player or as an individual. The team is doing this and that's that. And in his mind, that is wrong because there are different ways to, in his mind, deal and show your support for racial injustice, or show that your opposition of racial injustice. There are other ways to do it than a simple gesture.
But when he was asked, and then you carry on. Before they were instructed, he wasn't doing it. And now they've been instructed, he's categorically not doing it. Is there an understanding of why? Is it because he sees it as tokenism, or is it because he doesn't agree with the principle of it in the first place?
I would lean towards the former and say that he thinks it's tokenism. It's become an empty gesture. It was symbolic at the start. And obviously that in his mind, probably that narrative has been hijacked. But again, I'm speaking out of place here because I've not spoken to him directly on this, but given his previous conversations, when we've discussed this, I think it is a feeling of it's an empty gesture when you're doing it because you're told, or you're doing it because everybody else is doing. You should be doing things that you feel deeply are going to impact the community around you, which, as I said, long before Black Lives Matter became a hashtag, he's been doing the very things that bring some sort of dignity to human lives, to those people who don't have a meal, taking them home and having supper with them, sharing whatever cricket equipment. You know, he's a human on a very deep level. And now being told to do that, I think almost eradicates everything that he's done before, because if you don't do this gesture, then you don't care.
Yes,
well,
yeah.
I've cared for most of my life.
Sure.
I think it's pretty much where he is.
Right. It was the game that was, well, it's an event in itself, isn't it? It's a world event. It's not just the biggest game in cricket. It's one of the biggest sporting events in any sport Over a billion people watch when India play Pakistan. Pakistan had a zero record in World Cups against India, but boy, oh boy, they waited 28 years, Harmy, and then they did it in style with a 10-wicket win that saw Pakistan as good in every department as I think I've ever seen them.
Yeah, they were excellent. It was a really, really, really good performance, especially with the ball first up. We talked about it in the preview, how good Pakistan could be. I still think they'll get into the, you know, they potentially could get they will get in the semi-finals, I think, now. But I think we might see that game again. I think we might see that game again. It wouldn't surprise me if that's the final, India versus Pakistan. And what a final it would be. A billion people, like you mentioned. Sean Afridi was absolutely brilliant with that first over. Got the ball to swing. The one he got Keir Rahul with to get the ball to go through the gate, bang, onto the top of the stumps was an absolute beauty. You know, it was a Makram bowled a ball in the final of the World Cup in 1992 against then Chris Lewis, Alan Lamb, and then Chris Lewis. And that ball was every bit as good. You know, at pace, moving back from off stump into middle stump. A top batsman in Rahul not being able to get anywhere near it after just getting Rohit Sharma out, LBW. It was a perfect start. And India never really recovered. I didn't think at any point in that game, I felt as though India are back. You know, Kohli had a partnership with Pant, but every time they were all seemed to be like 5 runs short on a power play, 10 runs short, you know, coming into the middle period, and probably 15 runs short overall at the end of the game. I never really felt that India were back in the cricket match. And then, you know, Rizwan and Babar Azam knocked them off for no wickets down, and it was an embarrassing defeat for India. And like I said before, I just didn't think India ever recovered. They seemed to be shell-shocked. It was like a boxer getting a rabbit punch in there. He just seemed to knock all the wind out of the sail of India. And there was no real comeback.
Talking about emotional and embarrassing, Virat Kohli was at it again afterwards. I actually, on the field of play, it was truly heartening to see the interaction between the India and the Pakistan players. Yeah. I mean, they might have fought half a dozen wars against each other, and the governments are at each other's throats, and the fans maybe take it all a bit too seriously. But the players have never got over-emotional during the play. I mean, I've seen most India-Pakistan games in the last 20 years, and they've never been over-emotional. But afterwards, in the press conference, this was a very emotional Virat Kohli responding to a suggestion from a journalist that Ishan Kishan may have been a better option to open the batting than Rohit Sharma.
It's a very brave question. What do you think, sir? What do you think the team?
No, please.
I played the team that I thought was the best. What is your opinion?
No, I'm just asking you.
Will you drop Rohit Sharma?
I'm not going to comment you.
From T20 internationals, will you drop Rohit Sharma?
No.
You know what he did in the last game that we played? Yeah. Unbelievable. So, if you want controversy, please tell me before, so I can answer accordingly.
That was Virat Kohli doing his thing in the press conference. He is very emotional, and he's been doing more and more umpiring on the field in recent times, Harmy. So forever giving himself out or telling the umpire to review this or do that and be better. This is his last turn in charge of the T20 side for India. Do you think he's, I don't know, is he stepping away at the right time? Do you think is there a ready-made replacement?
Yeah, quite possibly. I think there's sometimes you need the same message, but you just need a different singer, don't you? You've got a song that's been sung for the last 4 years, and after a while it gets a bit boring, it gets a bit tedious, and you all of a sudden, if somebody else comes and sings it, it might be the same song, but it's sung in a different way. And I think sometimes when cricket captains or team managers, or even in football team managers, that there is a shelf life for the length of time that you've got, because your voice just gets a bit tired. And I think Virat possibly was in that boat when he decided to go. I love Virat Kohli. I think he's a great character for our game. I think he's a great custodian of our game when it comes to red ball and in white ball. I think he does cross the line every now and again, and we pick him up on it. But his passion is brilliant. His enthusiasm is fantastic. And he's replied to this journalist off the back of Rohit Sharma. I'm 100% behind. How can you possibly question Rohit Sharma? He is the best batsman in world T20 cricket from an opening point of view. Not by a country mile, because I think Chris Gayle, over the history of the game, is up there, very much up there with him. But there's nobody else anywhere close. He got an absolute beauty. Shaun Afridi bowling 90 mile an hour in swinger that hit him flush on the pad before Rohit picked his bat up. And these things happen when you're dealing with pace. So I would like Ishan Kishan to play, but I would like them in the middle order and not instead of Rohit Sharma. I think a lot of people now, because of the social media, and everybody's got a voice, everybody's got an opinion. I think some opinions just should stay quiet and shut up, because, yeah, to question Rohit Sharma for me is embarrassing. But I can understand, you know, Kohli's passion, because this was India-Pakistan. His team didn't turn up, and he'll be driving them forward. And that might be a wake-up call for India. And you might see India just go unbeaten between now and the end of the tournament, because you've got a nice group. They've got some nice games to come back and play. I've just got a funny feeling we might see that game again at the end in Dubai with the trophy on the line, because I actually think England will play Pakistan in the semi-final. And I don't see anybody getting in India's way, even with a 10-wicket defeat. I still don't see anybody getting in India's way to get through to the final.
I sometimes wonder whether the Indian press corps get together before each Virat Kohli press conference and say, right, who's going to ask him the stupid question today?
Yeah, who's going to wind him up today, because we need it. It's just great value, right? I'm on his hit list. He's on his hit list. Right, he hasn't had a go at you yet this month. You can ask the question.
All right. Moving on, just very quickly, did you see the video on social media of Mohammad Rizwan visualising his innings before he actually played it? It was absolutely genius. I mean, he played all the shots, just himself, before the game started, out in the middle, behind the stumps, and he was hooking and driving and even dabbing a quick single here. And then when it was replayed on social media, it was his actual innings with him playing those shots. That's the third or fourth 100 partnership, by the way, between those two in T20 cricket this year. They were phenomenal.
They were, and it was a great video. It was a great video for any young player to go and have a look at. Anybody listening who wanted to make the way in the game, you know, playing, you know, youth level cricket, having an idea of what you're going out to do before you do it is something that I would encourage anybody. You know, they talk about, you know, visualization and everything that comes, but sort of looking down the wicket at where the areas you're looking to play, what shot you're looking to play it from, will stand you in good stead before you actually go and start your innings. You know, when you go and start your innings, you know, the bowler bowls and you have to respond to that. But if you've got an idea of what you're trying to do off the lengths that you're trying, and that's all Rizwan was trying to do, and he was absolutely brilliant. But the partnership, you're right. 100-run partnership. These guys have been playing. The guys have been playing. Pakistan, you know, we're not talking about England not going, New Zealand going home. They went back into their domestic cricket and played 6 weeks of 2020 cricket, and they played a good level of cricket. Rizwan got, I think, a couple of 50s. Babrizam got, every time I seen his name, it was either a 50 or a 100. So, and they played against, and this is the beauty about it, they played against lesser opposition, where they dominated. Afridi dominated with a ball. Rizwan dominated, so did Babrizam with the bat. That means you're going into a tournament with confidence.
Yeah, no, quite right. We've only got a couple of minutes to wrap the show up now, so very quickly moving on to the rejigged England schedule for next summer. They'll now play the fifth test against India. But that's a series decider, and I was delighted when that was confirmed. Yeah. You know, I know it's a year later, but, there was a series that needed to be decided, and it is going to be decided. So it's a one-off test match with a huge, huge amount riding on it. And that'll be played at Edgbaston, because Old Trafford is busy.
Old Trafford's busy. It's got a concert on. Black Eyed Peas are on there at the time. So they're going to Edgbaston, a great ground for England. England love playing at Edgbaston. They go well at Edgbaston. And like we've just mentioned about New Zealand and Pakistan, England will be ready and gunning for India when they actually get to the British Isles and they get to Birmingham for that test match, coming off the back of a one-day series. And yes, I'm 100% with you, man. I'm pleased it's a series decider and not just a Mickey Mouse benefit match for a one-off game. There's a lot on that test series. It should have been finished in Manchester. But hey, let's see what happens when we get to Birmingham, which will be July, isn't it? July next year?
Yep. Again, just quickly, Dom Sibley withdrawing from the Lions squad to spend time at home working on his game to regain his England place. It seemed fair enough to me. I mean, they didn't seem like disloyal in any way. I mean, it's going to be a very difficult tour for the Lions in Australia, to be honest. I'm not so sure how much game time there'll be for them. And so your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you on that one. Good for Dom that he's identified that. It's not so much, they talk about working on his game at home. If I was encouraged, I would encourage him not to pick a bat up for 3 or 4 months. Just say, look, enjoy your break. Because he's had a tough time, rough ride, been in the bubble. When you're in a bubble, I can imagine being in a negative frame of mind, it being very, even more tough. I'd encourage him not to pick a bat up for 3 or 4 months. Not even interest. Live your life, enjoy yourself, and then come back. Get yourself into a pre-season ready for Warwickshire and go and start the season and belt out 200 or 300s and say, right, might not have pulled any trees up last summer. There are things he needs to iron out, and I'm sure along with Mark Robinson and Paul Farbris, he will. Sometimes away from the game, getting away from the game mentally, freshens you more than anything else. And, good luck to him on that front.
Okay, finally, in the last minute, two new IPL franchises have been confirmed in Ahmedabad and Lucknow, costing a cool £500 million and £675.2 million. Have you followed what it means for the competition? 74 matches. I think it'll be as long as 2 weeks longer than it has been before, which, again, it just affects the whole global game. The IPL, as we've known for a long time, is expanded, and it was confirmed this week.
Yeah, it was confirmed. Manchester United fans will be happy that their Glazer family didn't get to spend a little bit more of the Manchester United money on an IPL franchise because they got outbid. Love it, hate it. It was always here to stay. They've got the franchise system a bit like American sports, no relegation. This is box office TV. Where it's going to be, it's 74 matches this year or next year. In 5 years, it'll be 100-odd matches. And this is going down. This is going to take over cricket, in my opinion. And whether you think it's good or you don't, the reality is the IPL is going nowhere. It's only getting bigger. I can see in the next 5 to 10 years being two tournaments a year, and the players are going to have a choice. Do they want to play franchise cricket for enormous amounts of money, or do they want to play international cricket for their country? And I think it could be simple as that, because I can only see IPL going in one direction and international cricket just cracking on in another direction, and players will have to make a choice. And it will devalue international cricket because players will go where the money is because short professional careers. And I don't blame them. But like I said many, many times, administration of the governance of world cricket has let the IPL get to a point where it's no return now. And they are too big for any format of cricket. And that is never, ever going to change now. So is it good? Is it bad spectacle cricket? Yes, it's going to be good because the best players are going to play against each other. Financially, it's going to help the global game. But for international teams around the world, where they fit their cricket in, unfortunately, I think they're just going to have to play without their big superstars sometimes.
Thanks, Tommy. You've been listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast now available on the following on feed via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back at the same time next week, but this has been the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.